it's very important to have that really fixed in your mindset that their family is your priority.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families. Today, I'm sitting with Paul Aragones, a fantastic marriage coach who is based in Germany, but works worldwide with marriages, husbands and wives who want to take the trajectory of their marriage and move it in a new direction. And so I want to give Paul a chance just to tell us a little bit about himself and how he got into coaching.
Hey, Tim, first and foremost, thanks for having me. It's such an honor to be here and to share about my story and how I became a spiritual marriage coach. As I already told you before this interview, I have a lot of things that I've experienced with my own marriage life, a lot of mess, I would say. I am married to a beautiful British-German wife, and we've been married for 14 years. And our story is one of, I would say, many who had undergone through a lot of trials and temptations and fighting. And I would say that basically, I mean, we could talk about this afterwards if you want more specifics into it. But we've turned our mess into our marriage. Mess into a message. I get this wrong a lot. We turn a mess into a message where we do believe that our story of hope and renewal and perseverance can apply to a lot of people in their own marriage. So
do you want to give us one of those stories?
Yeah, definitely. One of the major things that I would say that could impact a lot of people, even in your own audience, would be that the factor of this day and age not giving up in your marriage, especially when you are in a very different culture and how you in your belief, especially if, let's say, your wife was not a Christian. Because when we got married, she wasn't a Christian yet at that time. And I think that the most important thing that we need to remember is that you shouldn't really give up on your wife. And I know it's not a common thing, because at that time when I was with her, when I met her, I was really running away from the Lord. And so there would be no way for me to meet her if I was in a good Christian life, because I met her in China. And in China, I know the Christianity is really strong, but since I don't speak Chinese, it's really hard for me to find him. And so I was running away from the Lord at that time where I met my wife. I was teaching English in a certain school, in an international school. She was also teaching in an international school, and that's where we met. But we're not Christians yet. She's not a Christian yet at that time. So what happened was that I made a choice where if I wanted to go back to God, I couldn't marry her, just because it's not going to be aligning with my values as a Christian and how we live our life. And so I prayed to the Lord. I shared with her in subtle ways, not forcing anything. I just told her that this relationship I have with Jesus fills the hole in my heart. That's where it gave me meaning to my life. And I think that really impacted her. And so with her culture being here in Germany, it's really difficult to have that belief. And over time, I just shared my belief and how it gave me comfort, gave me hope, and gave me peace. And there was one ultimatum, I would say, that I gave her when I said that she has to read the book, The Case for Christ. I don't know if you know that, by Lee Strobel. So this is it's a book about knowing the real, I think, archaeological, philosophical, and even like evidence of the resurrection of Jesus, or the truth about Jesus, that he really did exist in the history. And so I gave that book to her with the prayer in my mind that if she doesn't believe afterwards, I would just end the relationship. And so that time when she went to Laos with the book on her own for 2 weeks, she read the book and every night she said she started praying and accepting Jesus in her life. So that's really something that I would hold on to. And I would encourage other people that, yeah, it's not too late. So I think we have, and this is one of the things that I would say Christianity has been very adamantly resisting, that, you know, I do understand that once you're still dating, you couldn't, it's always recommended not to have a non-Christian girlfriend. And I would probably still say that you shouldn't, that you shouldn't have that. just because you will avoid a lot of issues and a lot of problems, you know, having that relationship. And there's no guarantee that it will be going to be smooth sailing afterwards. But what I could say is that if you are stuck in that situation, that's not the end of your life, or you cannot say that Jesus cannot penetrate the heart of your spouse.
And that there's hope still.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. That's not the pattern. That's not the model nor the design. Mm. But it doesn't mean it's the end. So I just want to give that hope to those people right now who's experiencing the same thing.
Thanks. So in your experience, you've seen that if you hold on, if you persevere through those difficult times, you can come out on the other side with something new, something redeemed, something better than you ever thought could be there. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Definitely. And there's a lot of factors that help me as well persevere. I would not lie to you and saying that I did it all myself. You know, definitely God and Jesus helped me go through that pain and those trials and tribulations, because one of the things that I put my relationship on is with God. And that every time that we had a big fight, or every time we're about to separate, in that evening, I saw myself just lying on my knees and saying, Jesus, I know in your name you said there's power. And so I just lift up to you my marriage, where if you don't show up, we're going to separate. Mm. You know, I've said that many times. And Jesus always shows up. I said to him, like, this is your design. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. I don't have any ideas how to solve this. But the next day, Jesus either changed my heart to apologize to her, or changed her heart. And we tend to reconcile every time. Mm. That's really important. And number two would be to always have mentors. We had a mentor in Philippines who helped us grow our spiritual faith, and together and in the church, where we also have a small group that continue to pray with us, learn about Jesus, learn about life. Because if you don't have those community around you and you let yourself be isolated, it's not going to work for you, nor for anyone. And that's also true for any kind of relationship or goal that you need to set. It's always going to be easier when you have someone around you undergoing the same thing.
So where did you guys find that community?
In Philippines. And when we went to a church, so we had...
Was this your wife's first experience at church?
We started going to church in China, but that's just a couple of months. And the difference is that there's no connection. Like we know them, and there's an acquaintance. I mean, maybe we meet them sometimes when we have a party, for example. But it's not like life sharing. You know, it's not that we can ask them questions about what we're going through. We ask them. It didn't happen in China. It happened in Philippines. So I think
that's because the language barrier was too great.
No, we are an international church. It's a transient church, because everyone comes in for 2 years.
Oh, I see. People are moving in and out.
Yeah, exactly. So when we went to Philippines, we stayed there for 3 years within one church and in one small group where we had mentors who help us. And that's why I really believe that what I'm doing right now is really giving back to those mentors that helped me, because I wouldn't know how to solve it on my own without them praying for us, without them supporting us, giving us advice. And yeah, that's how I would say to anyone, if they want to be successful. Yeah.
What is tell me a little bit about your upbringing, and what was your parents' marriage like, and how did they influence your current marriage?
It serves as a cautionary tale, I would say, in my marriage, because I grew up first and foremost in a family of, I would say, non-believers. But my mom's a really strong Christian right now, but I didn't grow up like that until I was in third grade. And number two was that we were the second family. So my dad was married to another wife, and they were the first family, and my mom was the second one. So it's not like I always had that disconnection with my dad because I didn't know anything about his family, my cousins, and I didn't really have any strong connections, only until I was in college where I met some of my half-sisters. So I grew up in that mindset of I don't know anything about how to be a dad or to become a husband. And all I have was my time at church, because I serve in the youth group. I became a missionary when I was in college, serving other people. And all of those things about how to become a good husband, how to serve your wife, and have that concept of servant leadership, all of those things I've learned because I was just surrounded with the people from who love Jesus and were really into knowing more about God. You know, I wouldn't know anything about that if I just focus on my family, on my parents. And how
is there anything that your dad did growing up that you would hold on to as a parent, or would you say that pretty much everything your dad did, you've kind of been like, never mind, I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah, right. No, I think one of the best things that my dad did that I really appreciate that I would not let go of, and it's still a big responsibility for me, was his way to provide. He's a good provider, I would say, and he tried his best to provide for all his three families. And that is something that I couldn't let go, you know, and that's something that I could say good about him. Mm-hmm. And was that his ability to provide for all of his three families. That's
he was a hard worker.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. And there were some things that I would need for school, for example, when I was in college, like I need a good computer, doing some projects because of my thesis, and he provided. And I don't know sometimes how he could provide, because I know that it's not really, I mean, probably in my life, it's not that cheap, for example. And so, because he's a seafarer, I don't know if that's very familiar in the U.S., where he goes to a ship.
On a boat, he's on the ocean.
Yeah, for 3 months, 6 months, sometimes a year when I was younger. And so he has a lot of, he gets a lot of income. And then he separates that for his three families. So I think that was something good that he did for us, that sometimes still, I'm not in that level yet, or probably because the economy now is different and it's not that easy as it was before. So that is something that I still put myself into as a challenge.
Yeah. Wow. Tell me a little bit so I'm going to ask you two different questions. One is, what are the things in your marriage that you do with your wife that you think every husband should do with his wife? And then the next question is, as a father, what's one or two things that you do with your children that you think every father should be doing with his children? Yeah. So first is for your marriage.
Yeah. My wife and I, whenever we have a fight, and I know this is not probably not pretty common, is to reconcile. And I think everyone should have that as a part of their life, where when you say reconcile, it's really something that you sit down together again and talk about what happened and apologize. And it sometimes it doesn't mean that you win when you air an apology, or it also doesn't mean that you're a less of a person. I think that's what the society has been teaching us, that if you apologize and you're less of a person, you're not very dependable, you're not man enough, or if you apologize too much, then you lose that credibility of if you really meaning of what you say. And so that's really one factor that every husband needs to practice and to learn, is the ability to reconcile.
What do you recommend that people do when they don't want to say I'm sorry?
Right. I think
they're hurt so badly, you know, they don't want to say the words.
Yeah. There was a study, it's like in psychology, I can't remember exactly, that your emotions actually dies down after 24 hours or something like that. That's why Paul said, right, that don't let your anger goes down.
Let the sun go down in your anger.
Yeah. Oh, you're angry. How we interpret that actually is that doesn't mean that you have to say sorry right away, but you can let a day go to just work on your emotions, manage your emotions. Because when the emotions are gone, then you have this ability to reflect what really matters to you when you're in a cool head, right? And so we don't believe that you need to talk about it after a week. It's too long. You don't know all the details of what happened, and it's not something that you will remember. And you might even tend to forget about it, and it will happen again. And so a day would be fine if you kind of manage right there. And the Holy Spirit has a big role to play, where the Holy Spirit needs to convict you of it's your mistake. So that calls for maturity to accept and acknowledge your issue. Now, if you can't do that, and if you can't say sorry, I think some of the reasons why is because when you say sorry, number one, it says that you lost the argument. And number two is that you accept other person's explanation as a man, right? That you accept that he's right because you're saying sorry. Mm. So those two things prohibit us from apologizing. But if we see apology as a way to win the relationship, the way to win on your wife's feelings, then you see it differently. And for me, when I do that, it's not because I don't think that every time I apologize, I think I was wrong in what I say. You know, let's say if I believe that we need to go to church, this is an example. We need to go to church on Sundays because that's very important to raise the kids with. And I cannot apologize that was wrong when I insisted on that, for example. So I would just apologize because the way I say it, or if I name called her, or if I didn't care about her emotions or her feelings.
Mm-hmm. Or you said it partially, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Or I judge her, like what kind of a Christian you are if you don't go, you know. So those are the things that you need to apologize with, and how you said it. And sometimes a lot of us really forget about how we say things, because that's actually why we fight 90% of the time. And that's also true for my kids. So that's really connected, because reconciliation is also not highly practiced or preached in our children, that when we get angry with them, and when we try to discipline them, we always have this anger, and that's what we see all the time in society and even in movies, that you can be angry with them when they're wrong, you shot at them. But then after that, we don't have this reconciliation where, hey, can we, you know, just talk in a room or their room? And you need to teach them to say sorry or apologize to you or to their mom. And you need to talk to them in such a way that they are loved, that they're accepted, that they're forgiven. Mm-hmm. And you need to have that symbol, not even you need to hug them, you need to show that, hey, you know, we're still together even though this happened. And that sets them up for a life where, as they see the Father in heaven, that there's a God who is just and will not tolerate any kind of wrongdoing or sin, but there's also, he's the same God who would also forgive you, and you have the chance to go back. Mm-hmm. And because we're good at reprimanding our kids and telling them how wrong they are, but we're not good at and going back and making that relationship work, because that's what they really need.
That's great. So reconciliation would be what you would say is one of the highest priorities when it comes to marriage and also with your children, is being able to say, I'm sorry for whatever that might be, whether that's a way you said it or it's actually what you did or said.
Yeah.
But that you're able to say, I'm sorry.
Mm. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. That's definitely what I would recommend.
That's great. What are a couple things that you do with your family, like practical things that you do with your family that you think have really taken your family from what it was, average maybe, or below average, to great?
I don't want it to really scare our chair to say we're in a great family. I would say that our family is striving to live that kind of life where it's in that road of becoming a great family. And
let me ask you this before we go any farther. I used the word great. What would be another word that you would use? Maybe it's not great. Maybe it's close or intimate or.
Yeah. I would say that it's a, what do you call this? I would say awesome or meaningful. Or intentional.
Intentional or engaged, maybe.
Yeah. Engaged family. Mm. Because for us, I don't know in the US, but in Europe, you know, work and life balance are very important. And we tend to have a lot of time together, I would say, more than my friends when I was single. So most of our weekends are spent together with them. So either they will have a play date, so we engage in their play dates, or we just do something together almost every weekend where they have their sports on weeknights. So weekends are really just for us. Most sometimes, those two days, and Saturday and Sunday, either we go to a park, either we visit a museum, or even if we visit a friend, they're always with us. You know, they know how we engage with our friends. But that's also becoming a struggle now because my kids are turning, my eldest are 12 years old. They want to do their own thing, right? And so that's where that is shifting to, for me to be engaged in what they want to do. And so at their age, at least when their school is, they wanted to do like podcast, you know, or a music video, where that was so foreign when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know the term geocaching. Have you heard about that?
Yeah. Geocaching. Yep.
Yeah. So they're that age where I wouldn't do that by my own. I it sounds interesting, but it becomes more engaging for me and more exciting because my kids are into that right now. When they're into Pokemon, when they're in fourth grade, I did play with it. I did read what, you know, which Pokemon, famous Pokemons are there. I didn't watch it that much, but mm-hmm. I try to be at least familiar in what they are playing. And then they got into Minecraft. And so I got engaged into those things because I'm an IT in my day job. And I got interested. I asked those questions, what they're doing and who are they playing with? Why is it so exciting for them? And it's mostly because of their peers. A lot of other children are doing that.
Friends.
Yeah, and friends. So, and I see that it's not very harmful for them to, you know, to, let's say, it's not like violence in their, you know, playing violence or something like that. So I engage with it and I say, okay, it can play that. It's no problem. And aside from that, I think that the problem what we have here right now is the, and compared to us growing up, is having Christian friends. It's not that easy for them right now, or at least a year ago, because we brought them to public school and we moved to different churches because the kids or in their age is not very apparent and there's not a lot of them in Berlin. So it's very important for us to really find and make some time for them to have Christian friends. And so we moved them to Christian school. We also tried to be engaged in the youth group that started recently. So that's where we spend our time on the weekends. And I think I want to say also is it's that, I don't know for other people, but when I got married, my family become, I would say 80 or 90% of my life. I do have friends. I still miss them, but I probably meet someone on average, like a guy, let's say just for drinks, would be once a month. Sometimes not even, or if my colleagues or if my company have a dinner, that's the only time I would meet them. But not because, let's say, for a Saturday, hey, let's just go grab a bite or do something together. It's very unusual.
So it sounds like what you're saying is for men who want to excel in their marriages and with their children, that they need to prioritize those relationships. And it sounds like that's what you're doing, is that you're prioritizing those on your time that you're not working. You're spending 80% of your time somehow with your family, whether that's directly with them or you participating with your kids in what they're doing, or the smaller ones participating with you in what you're interested in doing.
Yeah.
You'll have to have them on here next time.
Definitely. Definitely.
That'll increase your percentage.
Exactly. Only time I'm doing this is because when they go to sleep, you know, so now I have to have this marriage coaching right now, which goes against my family. But yeah.
I totally feel you on the 8 p.m.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's the only thing. But I think it's very important to have that really fix on your mindset that your family is your priority. And I think that's something that you and I need to teach, because if people have that mindset, I mean, it's only like a matter of fixing communication, fixing their you know, how they live their life. But if they have that mindset that your family is your priority, like, it's almost fixable in any issues that you have.
Yeah, you know, this doesn't translate directly, but in the past, I've spoken to some men who they're excellent at work. They run meetings at work. They know how to keep a calendar. They show up on time. They know how to speak professionally to their coworkers and their employees. And not every one of those skills translates directly to the family, but I think the principles do directly translate. For example, you can show up on time. When you say you're going to do something, you do it.
Yeah.
You plan it in advance and you make it the best it could be.
Yeah.
You know, you think about, you go on a vacation, you don't just go, but you go with a plan of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. And what's the point? What's the purpose of what you're doing? And I think if we as men took some of those skills that we excel at in work
Yeah.
And we not directly applied them, but we took some of those, that focus, and we put it towards our family.
Yeah.
I imagine marriages and children would explode in joy, you know, to see just the investment that we're making in the family instead of only at work. So that goes along with what you're saying with that prioritization.
Definitely. You know, actually, I had a master class a couple of months ago, exactly just what you, about what you said, because even the way we communicate with our colleagues, sometimes it's very shocking that how we give them the level of respect, how you try to argue with them, and how you try to have that kind of, like when you argue with your colleagues, you know, you engage in a very respectful manner, and you give the points that you need, and you know what, I understand how you feel, and I do really appreciate you sharing your thoughts. You don't do that to your wife, you know. You just it's completely different how you treat your wife when you engage in an argument.
I wonder too if you could think about it at work. You have this common goal, and if you can both agree on what the common goal is, suddenly having the conversation is different. But sometimes that in closer relationships,
you've
lost what that common goal is, you know. And so oftentimes the common goal is the relationship. It's it's not the task. It's how do we strengthen our bond together?
Yeah.
And sometimes we miss that, don't we?
Definitely. And we tend to focus on, I don't know, I just don't get it when you're so comfortable with someone, and because that's your family, right? Like you feel like you could say whatever you want, and then you lose your guard, you put off your best self, like you're taking that off because like you're at home. But when you're at work, if you bring on this professional mode that you're very respectful, you're good. I don't get it. I don't get how people or some men do that in that kind of aspect. Like they treat their work as very respectful and valuable, but when they go to their wives, like that's just how you are, really. So I don't get that at all. That is so backwards.
It is backwards, right? It's in some ways, it should be the other way around, right?
Yeah, but yeah.
Like, you go to work and you treat them like garbage, and then you go home and you treat your wife with a lot of respect.
Exactly.
It should probably be neither, but you know.
I just don't get how we sometimes in a way subconsciously give more importance and priority for the people that will not live stay with us forever. Except for those people that we think because they're going to stay with us forever, so we can just treat them whatever we want and without giving that love and importance.
Yeah. That's great. Hey, Paul, before we wrap up, why don't you give me a rundown of if you were to coach somebody, what would that look like? What does that path look like to get connected with you and then to get started coaching?
Yeah. Thanks for this opportunity, Tim. For me to coach someone, I really do focus on one-on-one. That is the most important one for me to do that. And we tend to really talk about first, of course, where you are at, finding what's the situation. And after that is to have this personalized plan of how we can improve that relationship. You know, like maybe in one person that would be they're having issues with their communication, or sometimes they're about to split up because even sometimes the spouse has another woman, you know, when I talk to other wives. But then we always try to figure that out, but there's always a common goal, is to fix the marriage, is to restore the marriage no matter what. That's the common root of my coaching. And aside from that, I also do a lot of master classes, but those are for free. I also give ebooks for free. And I also have my own Facebook group that I also give a lot of sometimes posting, or sometimes I do reels, like a tidbit that they can take for the day. And I do that as a sort of as a way of ministry. And the only thing that I do paid for at the moment is doing one-on-ones, because I really do believe that a lot of people sometimes just don't have the means, but they really want to improve on. So I provide all of those things for them. And I could send a link to you or where you can give that to people who are interested to improve your marriage relationships. Yeah.
Perfect. Do you have that link there?
It's called Team Marriage. That's my Facebook group.
Facebook/Team Marriage. Great. Hey, well, Paul, it's been great talking to you today. And thank you for sharing your knowledge and your experience. And I hope we can get more marriages sorted out and get guys, men and women coached to save their marriages so that they can last for their entire lifetime and enjoy the benefits and the joys of long-lasting intimate relationships.
Thank you so much, Tim, for this opportunity. Definitely, this will not be the last time.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.